Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today I'm excited to be in the garden with Nick Mason, founder member of Pink Floyd, and his wife Annette Linton Mason, an actress and sculptress well known for her roles in big hits such as New Avengers, Crossroads, Casualty, Treasure Hunt and more. I'm in their garden in Corsham, Wiltshire, which they bought from the Parker Bowles after Camilla and Andrew divorced in 1995. So Nick, it's lovely to be with you. How did you start drumming? You're an experimental drummer, very much so, aren't you?
I don't really know. It's very hard to sort of gauge your own playing, I suppose. But for me, it was the business of being in the right place at the right time. So I actually sort of hung out or saw Ginger Baker playing and Mitch Mitchell, of course.
Ah, right. But compared with other bands, you came across as a more considered band, Pink Floyd. Annette, what did you think of Nick and Pink Floyd and the boys? And when were you first aware of them and how did you meet?
Well, gosh, we have slightly different versions, so you can get his later. But basically, we met through a mutual friend, a man called Michael Scott, who insured Nick's cars, and he was a friend of my best friend's boyfriend, and so we went out for dinner and he invited me up to Silverstone and to help serve drinks as usual. I was an out-of-work actress. I had worked, luckily. I'd only just left drama school then. And he took me the night before to see Pink Floyd, and I briefly met Nick, but he doesn't remember that because it was at the interval. Oh no, it was at the end. Anyway, apparently he doesn't remember. So, but the next day at drinks, he was driving at Silverstone, and we were introduced, and later on had dinner, and but he was married then with two children. So 10 years later, we went out.
Gosh, it was a slow burn.
Well, both playing hard to get.
I see. Yes, very clever, very clever. But you're the only constant member since the band's formation in 64 and the only member to appear on every Pink Floyd album.
Yeah.
So when you look back at that extraordinary journey, you'd do it again, obviously. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think when you get to my advanced age, you really do appreciate how fortunate you've been, and I've had a wonderful time.
But you, I mean, it's not just luck, is it? Obviously, you're hugely talented, and you always say you must take every opportunity, isn't it? That's one of your mantras, and that you've got to seize every opportunity. And the fact that you do so many things, it seems, like the racing, driving, Le Mans, you know, to quite a high level. So you obviously are one of those people who just has a go.
Maybe. I'm never quite sure, really. I often think that Annette does things for fun and I do them for therapy.
I'm wounded. I'm the walking wounded.
So when you say you do it for therapy, you mean if you're not busy doing something or creating something, you'd go bonkers? You mean like that?
Not really go bonkers, no.
But you like to be focused?
I like doing things.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Yeah. And I wonder if that was just the way you're made, or the fact that your father gave you that car when you were quite young and said you can have the car if you learn how to maintain it.
That played certainly some part in what I'd like doing and what interests me.
You see, if my father said that to me, it would have been off the road and I'd have been on my bike. I just couldn't have begun to take a car engine to bits or mend its sprockets or anything like that. But
well, I think when we're talking about that, my father, I think I've inherited a slightly, what's the right word for it? Basically, he did it for himself as much as me. I mean, he loved tinkering with the car and sort of helping me to the point where eventually I could borrow his car to go out and he'd stay at home and redo the brakes on the Austin 7.
And it is a bit annoying that the garden event has now become about you showing off all your cars.
So your garden event is happening very soon.
Yes, it's 8th and 9th of May, June, because we're in May now.
And it's hugely popular. It raised £88,000 last year for charity.
In fact, I think it raised over 100 ultimately. But what's wonderful is the air ambulance, because I ride horses, you know, to support them, as they are self-funding now, aren't they? They don't get government grants, I think. So it's terribly important to support them. And, they've done wonderful work. And the other, Jenny Shaw, who runs the Bobby Van Trust, whose patron is the Queen, does the whole event for us. She organises the whole thing. So in fact, we would have barely earned anything if it wasn't for her organising it. But the Bobby Van Trust is a Wiltshire-based charity for helping people who are over the age of 60 who have been victims of crime, and the police support it, which is why it's called the Bobby Van.
But so on the day, we'll see how many of your cars sitting in front of your house.
Well, we'll have to do a count-up, I think.
You can't remember how many cars you've got. That is appalling. What, 20, 30?
Yeah, that sort of thing.
Wow. And they are mainly Ferraris or Bugattis, the whole shebang?
Yeah, that would the whole shebang would just about fit the bill.
Well, I remember doing the garden for a Bugatti collector. It was one of the first gardens I did, and he had to have three driveways so that when they had the annual Bugatti race, they could all start from different points or something. And it was the most awkward thing to have three driveways. I have to say, when I'm doing a garden, I find the cars the most difficult to fit in, because you come to the house and you see acres of metalwork sitting in front of the house, and I want to look at the house. But you would. I only saw one car when I came here. I was quite disappointed in a way, because I was expecting a red Ferrari at least outside.
I think you sort of, it's nice to show them off properly, but to flaunt them constantly would be a little gross.
Ah, right. So one thing about Pink Floyd, obviously, some of my era Pink Floyd were like the big thing. And the story of Syd Barrett, you know, who was a groundbreaking musician, brilliant, funny, good-looking, likeable. And he had to be thrown out, basically, because he became so erratic. But that obviously sits uncomfortably today with everyone in a way. But drug, alcohol, fame-induced breakdowns are a definite hazard of the business. And today, if that happened today, I think the same one wouldn't be able to solve it.
I don't know. I think it's very different now. We're much more interested, or we recognise the whole business of mental health. And basically, we're talking nearly 60 years ago, that simply wasn't something that was countenanced.
But my son's a medic, and you know, the amount of people that they see that have these drug-induced breakdowns or whatever, and they still really, it's very difficult to put your finger on A, what caused it, and B, how to solve it. And I know quite a number of people who have had these problems, and you just think it's almost getting worse, because the amount of chemicals on the market are extraordinary, and how you treat them every person is different, and how they take them, you never know.
Well, that's true. But I would say that in the case of Syd, although we think it was induced by LSD, that may not be the whole story.
And yeah.
Actually, there are some other issues that maybe Syd decided he didn't really want to be in a rock and roll band.
Mm.
And that's quite important, because we, of course, would have thought that was completely insane.
Yeah.
That everyone must want to do this.
Yeah.
And perhaps if he didn't, he found it very difficult to find some way of getting out of it, almost.
Because it was pretty meteoric, wasn't it? Your rise to fame. It might not have felt so at the time, but to us it seemed extraordinary.
It was. The transition from being a sort of college band playing a very occasional sort of college dance, as they would be called.
Yes.
Within a year, we were playing sort of 200 or 300 gigs and making records.
Yeah, that's quite difficult, isn't it? If you're not into that thing. But your tribute song to him, Shine On You Crazy Diamond, whose idea was that? And I thought that was lovely.
I think particularly of Roger's, almost certainly.
Yeah.
Because that was so much part of the album, and there was this very strange thing where we actually had a visit from Sid to Abbey Road Studios. And everyone has a slightly different story of what happened or how he was and so on. Mm. So the talk about creating myths.
Is that the time when you didn't recognise him?
Yeah.
He had just changed beyond recognition.
Yeah.
Wow, extraordinary. But I love the fact that you studied architecture. So you did 4 years, and that's where you met Roger Waters and Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So you were all... Now, do you ever think, what happened if I was an architect? Would I be a Richard Rogers? Would I be a Terry?
Norman Foster.
You'll be a Norman Foster, very new, very cutting edge.
Both of them were tutors for us.
Seriously?
Very odd. And in fact, I did a little bit of work with Norman last year it was now, when he was working on an exhibition. And it was...
And it the Pink Floyd exhibition?
No, this was something different on art, architecture and cars.
Oh, right. So he's a car guy too?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Oh, right. So your studios, you both got wonderful studios in the garden, brilliant building. So that is a bit Norman-esque, would you say? Or Foster-esque? Yeah. Or would you...
Yeah.
No, I wanted my art studio to be full of light, which is why it's all glass. but he see. And we did talk about when we downsize... that we might actually go for something a bit more modern. And in fact, we now almost live over there in our studio, don't we, darling?
Yeah, we do.
But that's because you're both driven by work, isn't it? Not
because of the building, Well, I surely. Don't see it as work, actually. I think it's... We see ourselves as creative.
Yeah, but that's because that draws you over there.
Yeah, so you're doing something you love. So... Yeah. You don't even think about it. You're sort of just waiting to go almost. And
Just to describe this garden, it's almost like the golden section, the rectangle, I think. It's a perfectly proportioned rectangle with lovely old Cotswold stone walls that rise up over the gateway. So you've got little doors going in and a little range of glass houses. And it is absolutely covered with veg. We've got globe artichokes.
There's one there.
Fan.
I love artichokes.
My artichokes are ahead of yours. Now, why is that, I wonder?
Because you're more a cultivator than me, obviously. But
No.
We do have Frank who does ours.
Yeah, I don't know why. Because I would have thought you'd be warmer than us, because we're on the east side, and so we'll be colder in the winter, hotter in the summer, and drier.
Yes.
So, but that's interesting. But it is lovely,
maybe
isn't it?
Maybe you planted earlier.
Well, we just leave them in the ground, don't you, as you do.
I think he's moved ours.
Oh,
I
he's divided why, them, which is why they've slowed them down. I've never, ever bothered to divide mine. And I remember I remember Christopher Lloyd saying you're meant to divide them. But I've never, because they get crowded, like rhubarb. If you don't divide rhubarb.
Yes, they were big.
If you don't divide rhubarb, it becomes really scrunched up and competitive, and so it flowers, because you know they will flower to set seed when they're getting two on top of each other to procreate, as it were. And I think it's probably the same. Mine are so crammed up together they flower more to procreate, but I quite like that because
it's beautiful. But so it's, in fact, I think we did have it for 2 or 3 years, you know, here, and I think it's just overflowered, so he was being creative for the garden event, probably, to make it look better.
That's always the thing. I always remember when I was doing the book on Highgrove that the head gardener said, I like to have all the vegetable looking perfect. So I like to leave my lettuces and things in so they're nice and big. I don't want big gaps in the row.
Yeah.
But obviously the late prince, the king, likes everything young and tender, and so he will want them picked. So there's a bit of tension, isn't it, between having it looking beautiful and having it looking full in the decorative veg garden?
I think I'm just grateful that we actually can grow some of it. So I think I tend to leave it to Frank, yeah, because he knows what I'm doing. I just know what I like, yeah, and ask if, you know, it's possible. And it's a bit like we're growing spinach under here because I love spinach. So it's more to do with what we want. Nick likes gooseberries, so we have a lot of gooseberries over there. And I like asparagus, so we've got some. We'll be having some tonight, hopefully.
So Nick, you've got 3 certificates from Le Manoir, Raymond Blanc's establishment. So you are obviously a sort of cordon bleu chef.
Well, I wouldn't say cordon bleu, but I like cooking.
So who is the main cook between you two, or are you one cook's boy and the other cook?
Or? This way, he enjoys it. I don't particularly, but I did cook a lot, you know, when the children were little.
Yeah.
So I'm very good at steak, chicken, duck, you know, roasting, yeah, quick. And the what's a bit worrying for me is Nick enjoys the cooking, does more, and he's going on tour next month, so I've got to cook for myself. So he's putting things in the freezer for me.
God, that is amazing. That is so role reversal, isn't it? So where we have this
I'm
big
beginning
rock star
to feel like a bit of a freak.
But it wasn't Pink Floyd that drew me to him.
It was his culinary cooking expertise. Well, you know the way to a woman's heart, obviously.
Yeah.
What is his best signature dish? What do you think?
Ooh, well, the thing is, it's interesting. He's changed his cooking slightly because he used to love things like steak and kidney, and I'm not particularly keen on kidneys, and he liked toad in the hole and all the old British things, which being half Danish, I liked a bit more fish. So he's now, as we're both getting older, become more health conscious in terms of cooking, and also because I used to only eat half of it because I used to leave the kidney.
Oh, I see. But you have your own Dexter cattle, so your steak, I would think, is sublime.
It's unbelievable. We'll give you some to take home. We've just put half a cow in the freezer. I feel very sad eating them, but they are wonderful. And the butcher in Corsham, he sells them, and he can't get enough. The locals
really
can't get enough from us.
That's amazing, because we have Dexters too.
Oh.
But I have a problem, because when I approach hotels and things, they all want like 25
yes,
rump steaks or whatever, you know, yeah, what I mean? So from one Dexter, I've got this and that and the other, but I haven't got enough to do 25 covers of whatever. So I
How
find it
Dexters?
Quite difficult. Oh, we just have, at the moment we've got 2-3,
oh,
but
right,
we just kill one a year,
yes,
for the freezer.
Same here.
Yeah.
And well, in fact, we're sharing it with the butcher because
maybe
we found quite a lot left over.
Right.
So we sell to the butcher, who then pays for the slaughtering, so we might get a bit less for the actual cow, but he pays for it to,
yeah,
be slaughtered. He sells it,
yeah,
and we don't have any of the issues. So he has actually taken half the cow. We've just got half.
Right, that's a good idea. Yeah, I was talking to Max Cotton recently, and he's starting up this sort of a cooperative, so in a gang of 5 of them, and it's called the Magna Barter. So what he will do the cows, someone else will do the veg, someone else has the pigs, and someone else has the wine.
We don't eat our pigs.
Oh, I do, yeah. But so I just thought that was a brilliant idea, because there,
yes,
must be so many people who can do one bit of it but not the whole,
yes,
diet.
Yes, and so it's lovely.
It.
The butcher in Corsham, he,
yeah,
loves it, and we have sheep as well.
Yeah.
And we started with 2 of each. And now we've got so many, because Frank does the lambing, the calving, he does the whole estate.
When you don't have to have lambing in December, and you can,
yeah,
lamb when they,
yeah,
like, it's quite easy, isn't it? They can just,
yes, and I have one sheep who thinks I'm its mother. Well, she thinks our black labs are its mother, actually, parents, because she runs after them, and because we bottle fed her,
yeah,
so,
yeah,
I take her for walks and things.
They're lovely, aren't they, sheep?
Yeah.
I think really,
yes,
really,
yeah,
really beautiful. But so what would you say is your signature dish, though? Your current signature?
If
you were entertaining
chicken pie.
Chicken pie?
Very good, yeah, chicken pie. He's very good.
And what's your secret to chicken pie?
I'm not sure that it's a secret. I think it's chicken and leek and mushroom.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And the pastry is perfect.
Yeah, puff pastry on top and regular pastry.
Oh, puff pastry, and it's not just roll, it is Nick Mason's pastry.
I'm not sure.
Well, you think it's just roll?
I don't watch him.
Oh, is it just roll?
Just roll for the top, I'm afraid.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry, you've gone down in my estimation. Three notches.
I get hungry quickly.
Oh, right. Okay, I'll let you off then. I'll let you off.
Also, it's perfect. No, and it's not just that. I mean, he does wonderful roasts. We tend to have a goose when we're here for Christmas. And he does it for the whole family. It's just... And then if anybody's ill, he gives them stews and soups.
So that's your downtime, your relaxing. Is it cooking and gardening? Or
It's that thing, sharp knives and alcohol. What's not to like?
So your knife skills, is that what you learnt at Le Manoir?
No, not really. It was a great idea for training at Le Manoir because... It was quite a long time ago now.
Yes.
But they devised ways of making sure that all of us doing the course actually were hands-on rather than just watching it, like, as you might watch a telly program on it. It was a chef called Clive Fretwell who actually ran it.
Mm.
And it was really clever because the way we all had to make the souffle... But we all did individual ones, so a chocolate one or a cheese one or a pistachio or whatever.
Mm.
So you actually saw how to make it work.
Mm.
And Sky Gingle, is that how you pronounce her name?
Yeah.
Gave you lessons in our kitchen?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
I'd finished the tour and I was really had some time off. And she wasn't, at the time, she wasn't running a restaurant. So she'd come for a day, Friday, actually, so that we could cook on Friday, and that would give us food for the weekend for sure, and probably beyond.
You see, I love her food. You know, Peter Sherman, now she's at Somerset House, is it?
Spring.
But when I read her cookery books, it's like, whoa, I need a day and a half to do this. You can't knock this up for supper. But when she taught you, did she make it simpler for you, or was it still sort of... Wow.
No, it was simpler. She was really good because she could be technical.
Yeah.
Or just a bit more sort of
flowery.
Yeah. Creative.
Yeah. And you used all the things from your garden?
Well, at the time we didn't have the garden. So the answer is no.
It was before she was Sky.
Oh, I see. I see. No, I think she's as great. I love her. And James Martin, you have cars and food in common
with. Yeah, it's... chefs are extraordinary, really. They all want to be racing drivers. Paul Hollywood's as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
Really?
He's quite a good driver.
But not Mary Berry. I've never seen her behind the wheel.
I'm not sure how easy it would be to get the race licence now for Mary.
I hadn't even realised there was such a thing as a race licence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, I thought you could be a liability on the course, so I couldn't just rock up there and...
Well, you can be a liability on the track, whatever. there's a grading system.
I see, yeah. So I always think that chefs leave a very adrenaline-fueled life, don't they? Because they've got to produce 60 covers of something spectacular. They've got these picky customers out there that like it this way, that way or the other. And they've got to remain calm and run the kitchen. So I think that is on the edge, isn't it? I've never met one that's calm.
Yeah. I'm not sure. There is a slight... I think there's a slight sort of synergy between drumming and being a chef. In terms of you're slightly not at the front. You're back in the kitchen. You're not always at the front of house. And drummers tend to be a little bit like that.
But I think you are more front of house than many, aren't you? Because you've got your own individual style, wouldn't you say? And you're doing your thing, the camera's often on you.
I still see myself as slightly at the back of the proceedings.
He's very humble.
Is he? He comes across. Yeah.
I know, he's very good at playing low key, whereas obviously I am louder, but... It's about the inner confidence, isn't it?
But he's got that big competitive side, hasn't he? The drumming, the racing.
As he says, he sees it as a form of therapy. So is that... Yes. I mean, why do it if you don't want to win?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I identify with that.
But he's patient, which is why he's now maybe a bit more front of house, because he's had to wait till everybody else has dropped out.
That's unfair.
It's taken 50 years.
So Le Mans, when you did Le Mans, how old were you when you did Le Mans?
I was talking about the band. But
But Le Mans, when did you?
Well, that would have been sort of very late 70s, early 80s. So.
Oh, right. So you were, can't think.
30-something.
That must have been exhausting. Were you surprised how exhausting it was? Or was your adrenaline running through the whole time? Were you so laid back behind the wheel?
I wouldn't know.
He always looks laid back, though, doesn't he?
He doesn't look laid back.
But basically, it's all churning inside.
Deep resentment, rage.
But not competitiveness.
No, right.
So did you find it exhausting?
No, because there's so much adrenaline, and you share the whole thing with... you've got other drivers in the team.
Yeah.
It's not like you're going for 24 hours on your own.
Mm.
But the whole thing was just, it was sort of the ultimate motor racing dream for me, being there. And so, I just really enjoyed it, I guess, rather than...
Also, Nick's always got a twinkle in his eye. So he might look as though he's asleep, but there's it's all going on a bit.
That joie de vivre is perfectly there, would you say?
Joie de vivre...
joy of life.
I know what it means.
Yeah, I'm sorry, yes. But I just think he looks like
I was hoping you were going to say, I don't think we've seen her recently.
You see, he can make jokes.
Very funny.
So, that's the other thing, is if I think I've said something funny, he's very competitive and tries to top it, and quite often does.
Oh.
We make each other laugh. That's the secret of good relationship, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Is
yeah.
it good?
It's good.
You're also pretty good on your charity things, both of you, aren't you? I mean, the design, the Paddington Bear statue, which was themed Wish We Were Here for the auction, today's Monday for the NSPCC. So you actually designed that, or you drew figurative sketches of it?
I can't remember now. The NSPCC thing was very good, but it was quite a long time ago now.
It's lovely that all those Paddington Bears auctioned off.
No, there were.
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, I thought maybe you had a hand in it because you're the sculptor.
Oh, I like to, but he doesn't always let me join in. And also, it's Nick. They want Nick's. And I will if he asks.
Right.
So did I have a hand in it? Probably.
Probably.
Yeah. So you have a lot of sculptures in the gardens, the lovely sort of dolphin.
Thank you.
Yes, beautiful.
Yes. Thank you.
And the boys, your sons.
Yes.
So you do them from clay and then you cast
them. What's interesting, I did do the dolphin from clay. The boys are fiberglass. And so I was learning a technique. So what you do is you do a cast of their body, a bit like dental cast, you know, when you...
With polyfiller type thing.
Well, not polyfiller. You do... It's quite complicated. So basically you make you do a mould.
Yes.
And then you do a cast in, what's the white stuff called?
Yes.
Plaster of Paris.
Plaster of Paris, yeah. Yes, not polyfiller.
Then you sculpt as well with clay. So it's, and then you send it to a foundry, because fiberglass is very dangerous and quite hard to do, and you need experts for that. But what was nice is that I'm still in touch with the people, Alec Ryman, who did all the models, you know, all the things for the Harry Potter films. They're very creative. So, but it's lovely. But it's not. It's almost not sculpting in a way, because you're using materials to, as it were, make your tooth. You see what I mean?
But you've got to make the original. So the
boys,
didn't cast them with the plaster of Paris. You didn't cover
them in
that and then cut it off.
You make the mold and then you fill the mold.
Yeah.
With plaster of Paris.
Yes.
So they, a bit like your teeth, you make the mould for the tooth and then you put.
But you did the mould round the boys, then. Yes, you did actually cover them, but not with the dolphin.
And they have straws in their nose to
breathe. I see. How long did that take to do that?
Well, you do it piece by piece so that.
Oh, I see. And then you put them together.
So the face is obviously the hardest thing to do because they mustn't move.
Yes.
for a little bit. So a lot of dentists are actually sculptors.
I might have a go, but the dolphin bit. So where did you take the mould from that?
I think I saw a picture and I copied it and I just made it. So what you have to do is, so that wasn't a mould.
Right.
I did it in clay, then I gave it to the foundry
and they cast it.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
But I want to do the boys in bronze now because the problem with fibreglass, it doesn't last forever. But I'm worried that if I do them in bronze, somebody will steal it. Because bronze, they're all stealing bronze statues, aren't they?
Yeah, but there are ways and means, aren't there? Yeah, you can mark them and things. Yes. So your main thing is an actress, but you've got the art
that
side as well.
That was what I earned money from. That was my career. And I did go to art school first, but then I thought, I can do art at home. You can't act home alone.
Could do, but...
And it's wonderful acting, and I had a great career and made great friends and lots of theatre and things. And but the main problem is that... it's the problem is getting the work if you're not a star. Funnily enough, I think my problem was I didn't want to be a star. Mm. You know, you wanted to be somebody else. Mm. That's why you become an actor. Although my problem now is about work is I don't want to be anybody else. I'm perfectly happy. So.
Mm. And your studio, I mean, I can see why you both want to spend time there because it's a wonderful building to be in, very modern, glazed, looking out onto the lovely pasture, the pigs, the menage.
And my horses.
And your horses. Yeah. But with your garden, so when you arrived here, what did you do? When Andrew and Camilla left, did you change it much, the layout?
We didn't change it a great deal, but we did do a number of things that sort of had got a bit tired and needed to be rethought. So we extended the terrace slightly. We certainly...
Which looks over the ha-ha and the meadow, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes, lovely.
And the swimming pool.
Yeah.
We put the swimming pool in. But we put an indoor pool in because of the weather. Mm. And we extended...
We changed the kitchen round. Interesting very because the house had clearly... had a makeover in something around the mid-60s, I think, because I recognised from my time at architecture school what we thought was fashionable at the time. So there was a sort of island unit that had been put in, which didn't really work. And the arga was tight to the larder, so that actually it was like having a sort of smoking
in the larder.
Permanent. You could keep the plates warm. Mm. So there were quite a number of things that it was nice to be able to just...
So we created the central island, which has worked, and also moved it further back because it was put in... So it was a much smaller area for the dining table, so it couldn't sit there very easily. But what was wonderful was when we came to look at the house, it was through a mutual friend. And so Andrew and Camilla very kindly made us lunch and she cooked us. So the Queen has cooked us a roast chicken. But I also point out, I said to her, how Nick does all our cooking. And she went, oh, you're so lucky. So I think she's got to cook now, though.
So was she good? Was the roast chicken good?
It was delicious. We had it in the dining room. But we sort of fell in love with the house. It's as you walk in, it's got a wonderful feeling.
Yes, it's and it's got lots of lovely stonework around it.
Yes,
and the buildings and
it
the garages.
Yeah, even if they were divorcing.
Yes, and the gardens here. So there's the wall vegetable garden. There's the terrace that you alluded to that overlooks the ha-ha and the horses and things. And then with the new studio, so did you have a big input in the design from your architecture days?
Yes, quite a... quite a big input, in fact, because there's some slightly unusual features to the way it works, so that it can work as a cinema or it can work as a recording studio.
That's brilliant, isn't
and the
it?
The footprint was the building that had to be the same as the building that was
there before.
So that's why it's on a slight L shape, isn't that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And with the garden, have you made structural changes or things like that that you wanted to?
In general, no.
Well, stone walls. We've moved some stone walls because we bought some more land.
Actually, the way it works with the ha-has, both at the front of the house and the rear, there wasn't that much that really needed doing. And I think what we probably like, I think both of us like, is the way it can just go from the garden straight into the woodland. And that's true.
And we call it Queenswood. We named it Queenswood last year. It used to be just...
Oh, really?
It's because they planted it.
Yeah. And what I think is really nice is the way your swimming pool building is in the orchard space. So you've got the cow parsley, the long grass, the orchard apple trees all wrapping round the glass, and it just sits in there very nicely, doesn't there? Must be wonderful inside and wonderful out.
Well, we didn't want to knock those trees down because they were lovely little apple trees, all miniature apple trees that they had planted as well. So I think there was a garage there, so we just turned it into a swimming pool because Nick built some other garages further back, didn't you?
So you can never have too many garages.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, this is another problem I have with many clients. Another one collects Bentleys. And they all have to be housed, don't they, for insurance or something. And it's like, oh, my God, another couple of garages going up in the garden.
Well, he's now got an airfield to house them all.
So you do keep them on the airfield now, do you? A lot of them.
Well, I haven't actually. I've got a share in an airfield. They live very comfortably there.
Oh, good.
It's beautiful, actually. It's
beautiful. Is it? What, the airfield
but
or the gower?
Nick doesn't want to promote it too much, as he doesn't do visits.
Oh, right. So how much work do you actually do in the garden? Do you ever mow the lawn? I mean, I imagine you've got a Ferrari lawnmower, have you? A Ferrari tractor or not?
No, we ought to have one.
But yeah, they do make them, don't they, for vineyards and things?
Yeah, I think they're a bit above our...
my garden. So I walk along paths and I pull up weeds.
Yeah, good for the waste.
Yes, and I recycle.
Squats.
Yes, we recycle everything. We have great compost.
Yeah,
and our horses, you know, they create compost, and so we try and recycle everything. And it is that terrible thing about walking around what you have, isn't it? That there's always something to do.
I think that's good. I think that's really good. And you need to do it all the time,
don't you? All the time.
And you need to look. You can't just walk by in a daze thinking of your Ferraris. You have to look and see that weed needs to come out, or I need to deadhead that.
Yes.
And that's what I like about it. I think it's a bit like having children, you know, you're nurturing it, you're watching it over it and giving it what it needs.
Isn't it lovely?
Yeah, I love it. But
and eating your own something you've grown is so lovely. And although Frank would say that, I mean, Frank grows most of it, but I feel I've... And also in London we have, so I do a bit more gardening there. But here there's so much to do, and Frank and Joe do it all.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, with the animals as well. I mean... I have grooms for the horses, but it is... And my donkeys. But... it is, he's never stops.
Yeah.
And I'm worried he's going to retire one day. And so if you know somebody who wants, a job.
You wouldn't have a...
Frank, is that okay?
you wouldn't have a Frank's grandson. Is there a Frank's grandson yet?
No. Could you get a grandson? But he won't be by the time...
Well,
by the time we drop dead.
It'll be more chance of me having a son.
Oh, right, okay. So that's a wonderful space you've got here. And you obviously enjoy it, and you relax in it, and you walk around it, and it floods into the house. And it's really is.
The sun has
nice.
Just come out to warm us.
Make the garden look even better. So So what did you think of the Chelsea Gardens this year? I saw you both out at Chelsea. What do you think of the style of them all?
I'll tell you what I loved was it felt much more relaxed.
The style?
The whole style felt just walking round. It didn't feel... It and there was one beautiful garden. You know, the stones were covered in moss. Did you see that?
Oh, the Japanese garden.
Yeah, was it the Japanese one? I can never remember. You know what's what.
Down by the hospital.
Yes, exactly. Yes. And I just, you know, that's the sort of thing I fall in love with. I like things a bit wild and a bit. That was the one that shouted at me. I mean, I took some pictures of other ones, I think. Oh, and I want to get one of those lawn mowers that...
Robotic lawn mowers?
Yes.
Oh, they are amazing. Don't tell Frank.
I have told him.
He's
always worried about... He rings them and then they don't turn up.
Really?
I don't know, Frank. You've got to ring them.
They are a Husqvarna. I've got Husqvarnas and I find them amazing. And the technology, you know, they're moving on so they'll do stripes because a lot of people don't like... Because they come out every day, trim a tiny bit off, which then mulches down very fast.
Yes.
So it's very good for the ecosystem and the soil. It increases the bacteria. But they do now do them with stripes and they do them from satellite. So you don't have to have the wire around the edge.
Yes.
And over Europe, they've taken up far more than us. And they have them on football fields. They'll do slopes. They'll do anything.
Yes.
We are very behind. I think we're wedded to the man going out on Sunday, up and down behind the mower. And that's
the only way they get out of the house.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes, exactly. So, but it's all going to change. I'm sure that they are. Yeah. I mean, they've changed my life. I mean, when I first brought ours out, we've got a ha-ha, not on stone one, but just I've made from telegraph poles. And the Dexters looked at this thing going round and they were prancing around. It was like, what? That's our job. That's our job. It was hilarious watching them. They just could not believe it.
That's great.
Yeah. So entertainment for them. It's a bit like television
for
them, really.
The horses might like it.
So are you big socialisers? I imagine in the past you've had lots of psychedelic parties with light shows
Certainly
and heaven
not.
Knows what, but you're not.
I've enjoyed, well, we're quite social, but the trouble is we don't really do dinner parties, mainly because Nick, when he does the cooking, means I have a lot of washing up.
So if we're a dinner party, you would still cook the whole meal for 12?
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. I'm impressed.
But
don't you have a washing up machine? Oh, yeah. You've got...
Anyway, you could employ some. But anyway, so what we do is instead of having dinner parties, which actually we should do more...
I think that must be what everyone says.
Is have a party. Yeah. I have a big party and pay everybody back all in one go.
Cheat. Yes.
Actually, I've had some good parties, but now organising it. And so I'm actually so happy staying in these days. I'm wondering what's wrong with me.
My older sister said that too, and she and her husband were the most social people in the world. And I thought, what's happening? But I think maybe it is a thing. You have your routine, you have what you like at home, and everything around you, and people come and see you now and then, which is lovely. But to actually, the effort of entertaining. When I met you with Nikki Haslam, when I said to
Nikki,
I said, do you ever get that feeling when you're asked out and the time comes and you think, oh my God, I'd so much rather put my feet up on the sofa with the dog? And he said, every time.
And really, Nikki?
I thought, even Nikki Haslam. Nikki, cannot. Are we all really like that? And we're just pretending to be social. It just worried me a bit.
Well,
to be honest.
I suppose, Nick and I are both so old, one of us might end up alone. So we just have to hang on to some friends just in case.
Oh, you both.
No, I love my friends.
I was going to say, you both have that short of it, I think. Anyway, any gardening tip? Especially from you, Mr. Mason, what is your top tip for our listeners in the garden that you think is the most satisfying thing that you do?
Oh, easy peasy, get a good gardener.
I thought you might say something like that, yes.
I was going to say the same.
Well, what about your artichokes?
Picking them myself.
Yeah. And do you like picking the little golf ball size that you eat the whole, or do you wait till they get big?
Well, it's one of those things that they become so prolific and all at the same time. Mm. And obviously, I want to eat them all. So sometimes I start golf ball and then as the size... the time goes on. And I have eaten a couple that are full flower, but they're not estate. But you cut off most of them, you get a little bit at the end.
I had a most delicious salad that was just made of artichoke bottoms, and she had so many artichokes.
How wonderful.
And that was the best salad I've ever had, actually. Yes. I think. It was really, really delicious.
And butter.
With a vinaigrette. You would have butter, would you?
I'm afraid I have a little artichoke with my butter.
A little. Are you like my father? He was like that. He'd eat a sort of 8-ounce pack down in one sitting. Yes. And when he went to Italy once, and he could not believe in southern Italy, when he kept asking for burro, and they just bought olive oil, they had no such thing, do they? Olive oil, and they didn't even know what.
And it is healthier, apparently.
Much healthier. That's what we should all be doing. Yeah. But you two look pretty good on butter, so what? Anyway, I always bring my guests a little present. So I bought you a plant. I bought you a Butylon nabob. And I don't know if you've got one of these. I was dreading the fact that I'd come in and see 600 of them, but I haven't seen one yet.
I'm not sure what they are.
But the Butylons are lovely. The people think of them as a conservatory plant, but I've actually kept mine outside all winter. They are lovely, and they will produce flowers up to Christmas. It's extraordinary, and people think they're tender.
Do we plant it in the garden? I put mine in a pot.
So it's okay. When it's in a pot, it's slightly raised, and so the microclimate, if it's 600 millimetres, is actually can be 5 degrees warmer than
outside.
On the ground. Yes, but if you had the weather forecast and Peter Gibbs or the BBC were saying it's going to be in -5 tonight, I would whip it into your greenhouse or frost tree. But they will carry on flowering. I mean, that one has been flowering now at home, and it's this sort of glorious pale magenta colour. Has been flowering probably for 4 months, something like that.
Can I say, really early. You're always welcome.
But it is a bit. That was one of my cuttings. It should look bushier than that. But if you give it a bit more TLC, it will be bushier.
Do cuttings?
They root very easily. You know, you can take those cuttings and you can get. I've still got cuttings from
my mother's plants that I've got, and I desperately keep. There's some in there, and it's my mother's, and I always say to everybody, our gardeners, because obviously they change occasionally, apart from Frank.
Yeah.
These are the only things you've got to keep alive because they were my mother's. So I'm going to pass them on to the children.
Yeah, no, they are really nice and very easy. No, cuttings, I think, is fantastic.
And
yeah.
and Holly and Chloe as well, Nick. Mm-hmm. You know, the girls would love them as well. So Nick has two daughters, and then we have our two sons. So,
and my final question before I let you go is your helicopter pink? Is that right?
No, that is not right.
Oh, so that was just someone making it up on the internet.
But
you fly it, Nettie, too.
Yes,
and
I do.
Planes and helicopters.
Well, I now just fly the helicopter because keeping it all going, you know, and also
instrument
you want to be
rating.
Good. But what's lovely is the helicopter is, it's just, I'll tell you what's wonderful about it is, as Nick says, I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie. I get in the helicopter and I feel so calm. Because it's lovely to be in control of everything, and you know you've got to do a good job.
You're obviously very switched on a mechanical, because they're not easy to fly, are they?
Well, I would say if you can pat your head and rub your tummy and then reverse it easily, you can fly a helicopter.
And is that generally known, or is that just Annette's...
advice. I think somebody else said that, but I realised I could do it quite easily. And
I'll have a go, but I don't think I want to fly a helicopter. I took 5 times to get my driving licence, so I think a helicopter would be way good.
And I race, and also I got on a bike and could ride it, so I just think it's something inherent in you. I would love to say it's because I'm good. It's a feel thing.
I think most things in life are, and you have a natural adaptation, and this 10,000 hour things, you can master lots of things, but to be really good at it naturally, there's something innate possibly. Well, thank you very much. It's been fabulous to see your garden, your studios, your wonderful artwork, and your dogs.
Thank you.
Bye.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.